Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is another fun episode with the Last Goldfish Toys. They make some of the cutest, weirdest looking goldfish in different variations, and they're addicting. I want all of them. This week you get to hear all kinds of things about their story, how they got started, where they work now, and why they do toys. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can support us by following on all socials at Toys on Tap. You can support us free by liking and subscribing and rating and reviewing wherever you get podcasts. And if you want to jump on the Patreon and support us even more, for $3 you get extra stuff, and it is super easy to sign up for that. patreon.com/toys on tap. Now let's get back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. Oh, how it popped up on screen was so scary for a second.
Slowly come into view.
Oh right. My gosh. I'm pumped. Is it only you that does the fish, or is there like a team effort here?
So it's a team effort. So I'm the designer, and my partner helps me like actually make them. So usually we'll do it together. We'll do like the design, and then he'll work on like doing the manufacturing part. But yeah, they're all handmade.
I mean,
sitting
on my desk. It is so big and so cool. I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah, oh, cool, man. Gosh.
I'm glad that you're here. I don't know if you've ever listened to an episode. We bring on artists that we find in the toy scene, and it is always so fun to find new artists, especially through places like Indie Toy LA.
Yeah, for sure. And pretty much all the artists they have are really like unique and cool. So it's nice to be part of that like little crew they got going there.
Heck yeah. We start every episode the same. You have to introduce yourself, tell us who you are and what you do.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So my name is Kelly Barfield. I am a toy designer. I'm a toy designer by day. I'm also a toy designer by night. I actually work at Kid Robot during the day, and then I also do our own brand at night. So toy designer through and through.
Yeah, unfair advantage when it comes to toy making. Holy moly.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's unfair, but I would definitely say it consumes all of our time.
Yeah.
Energy. But in a good way, you know, like we love it.
That's amazing. We're going to talk about all that stuff, but like everyone else, you have to walk me back to childhood. Tell me about the toys you're playing with, the cartoons you're watching, the things you're collecting. What made you into this person?
Yeah, sure. So I guess maybe a little bit of a unique backstory. I didn't really grow up with TV.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, didn't have TV. Didn't really have like a lot of games, didn't really have a lot of toys. Both of my parents were actually conservators. And that basically is the people in charge of like fixing artifacts at museums. And so kind of what that entailed was I would spend a lot of time in museums and going with them as they would like work on objects. My mom was an objects conservator, so primarily focused on like antiquities from like, you know, all over the place. There was like every culture imaginable. And so my experience was actually like growing up looking at like ancient artifacts as opposed to like kind of pop culture stuff. And that lends itself to like an interesting like come up through toy design and like kind of like what I'm doing now. But yeah, it was pretty different, I would imagine.
I mean, that's crazy. I didn't step foot into a museum until I was in my like late teen years. And that's where you're growing up and doing things. Like, what is that like? I mean, we went to work sometimes with our parents, but what is that like? Because you are watching your parents be hands-on with things that you're not supposed to touch. you're seeing all kinds of things that kids have no idea what is going on.
Yeah, so from like a super young age, I would say like 5 or 6 even, my mom would actually like bring me into the lab, and distinctly I remember she was working on like Egyptian mummy masks and like Egyptian artifacts, and I would sit there and I would like draw them. So
Oh my
I wasn't
gosh.
allowed to touch anything. I was, for the most part, I was bored as hell.
Yeah.
And I, you know, she's like, here's a sketchbook, you know, entertain yourself. So I would sit there and I would just kind of like sketch like whatever was around, honestly. And she would, you know, be working on these mummy masks. They do a lot of like in painting, and they do a lot of like, you know, modeling little bits to actually like fabricate pieces that are missing.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave, go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys
We talk about old toys
and new toys.
and toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So yeah, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who
But you
knows?
gotta check it
Anyway,
out.
Toy
Toy
Rats.
Rats.
YouTube.
Bye.
Bye.
And so in hindsight, like that was a really cool experience that I just kind of took for granted at the time. I think a lot, as you do. And yeah, it was just like hindsight is 2020, and it's entirely fascinating to me
Yeah.
now. And I think it did like influence the way that I think about like objects and like, you know, what we're designing these days. But yeah, like it was just really a cool experience. And I definitely took it as normal, you know, like I'm watching people work on these 4,000-year-old objects and
Yeah.
just kind of like, oh yeah, like that's cool.
There's something about potentially, especially with Egyptian stuff, like to potentially be drawing or sketching things that are holding like organs or things that might have been used for embalming. Like that's a dark thing to be sketching as a kid.
Yeah, I think I have an interesting take on it now as an adult. And kind of like growing up in museums, you know, especially through that lens, we tend to look at antiquities as like with a very serious and like austere nature. You know, like we're always looking at history through the lens of like science and, you know, fine arts. It has like this esteem to it that maybe isn't really innate to the objects themselves.
Yeah.
And so I remember, like, you know, I was left to my own devices enough to kind of just wander around museums, and I would find like I mean, I have tops, like I have top favorites. Like Egyptian burial artifacts, Japanese netsukes, and like Mayan figures. Those are like my top faves.
Yeah.
And I think what was so cool about them is they're more often than not quite ridiculous. Like they're kind of weird objects. And I think today we don't really have full context for like who's creating that and why.
Yeah.
And you know, historians and people in the art world who are very serious, they kind of lend their own kind of viewpoints on it. And it's usually like, oh, this is for ritual, this is for religion, this is like what was studied. And that air of seriousness is probably not what was, I think. I think that, you know, looking at like, let's look at today, for example, like
Yeah.
we're connected a lot of the time through like memes and meme culture, and we're looking at the things happening around us through like this sense of humor that is very intentional. And we take all of these serious things and we kind of memeify them and we put humor on it. And I just don't find that that is a new thing. You know, I think we've been doing that for thousands of years.
Yeah.
I find that a lot of the times we've lost kind of like that humorous aspect. If you look at like all of these artifacts, it's like people doing weird shit. It's like people having sex or people just like making weird faces. And
yeah,
I don't think we can take it that seriously. I think we have to like lend it to like who we are now as humanity. Like we're looking at it as humans. It connects us. We're connected through this humor. And I just find that like really fascinating. I think I think that's like kind of what draws me to like creating like physical 3D objects. It's like if you can connect people through that humor or through like just like the ridiculousness of creation.
Yeah.
Like that's it. Like that's what it is.
Yeah. I think my hope is that in the future, I mean, because we're able, like the podcast will exist forever, like somewhere in the digital scape. And so we've lost the ability to be like the past where they have no recordings of what they use some of this stuff for. And so my hope is that one day we lose all that digital stuff so that someone like finds your toy somewhere. It's like, oh my gosh, this is a religious goldfish.
Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, I'll embrace the cult of the goldfish.
Yeah.
But if somebody is looking at like my object and they're like, this is really weird, man. Like, I don't get it. You know, this has no context. This is just like a bizarre thing, but I love it.
Yeah.
Then that's like my goal. That's why I'm winning the art game that I've been playing.
Yeah. You know? I think like, that's... Yeah, that's how I buy art at DesignerCon especially. I will walk around and if it grabs my eye or I mean, that's what happened with the giant one. You see the giant one that's like spinning on the Gashapon thing and it's like, how do I get that?
Right.
Like it's a weird goldfish. I want that on my shelf. And I think that people get so stuck in the, I only collect this.
Mm-hmm.
And it leaves the ability to go see what's out there, what's fun out of the, and it's, that's a, I can't do that.
Yeah, I think, and I think that's what we're appealing to, right? Like,
yeah,
it doesn't need a lot of explanation. Mm-hmm. You know, people can look at it and be like, oh, that's, I feel that way. Like, I get that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a weird thing still. It has like hands and it's a fish. And
yeah.
Nobody fully understands. Maybe I don't understand either entirely, but you know, people can see like the expressive nature of it
and
feel connected to it enough to like want to participate. And that's been what's really been special for us, like kind of just launching this brand is like, how do we kind of just capture the relatability to people while simultaneously like making weird shit.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the brand ethos. Like that's what it is.
Yeah. I mean, you're nailing it. You're nailing it. I can't tell you how many times people walked over. Cause what sent me to find you is there was a guy that was two booths down that came back with like all the balls he had bought and was like cracking them open. And I saw him and I was like, what the hell is that, man?
Yeah.
Like where you just walked around and came back with that. And he was trying to describe what it was, but was doing like a bad job.
He was like,
I think these are fish and I think it's on that side of DesignerCon somewhere.
Right.
And so I just went walking and that's, yeah. Going from sketching at museums, when does art kind of pick up more in your life? Does it start there with those sketching out of boredom or does art kind of take a different route later on?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've always been interested in art. I've always been drawing. I've always been like sketching things. And it's mostly because I'm like a very visual person. I always have like a bunch of imagination, probably too much. Yeah. And so I was kind of just doing art my whole life. And my parents are both artists. My mom does metalworking and my dad does woodworking. And they were actually a big influence in saying, like, don't do art.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
We've done art, like, it's too much. Don't do something else. And maybe that was like the rebellion in me a little bit. But I've just like always enjoyed drawing. And so I went to school for product design, kind of along the lines, toy design, right?
Yeah, unreal. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, no, yeah. It was really great. I loved it. I actually majored in transportation design. So I got my degree in car design.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Very different, right? Very yeah. different. But I think what that was to me is they were teaching modeling. Mm-hmm. And I was fascinated. I wanted to like make things out of digital clay and like learn how to print things, learn how to like make objects. So that was kind of like the lead there. And I don't know, cars are kind of stale, but there's some skill set there that was like good training for yeah. for how to do what I wanted to do. And a lot of that was like characters and like just making like things that were entertaining to people.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong on cars being stale. Like, other than the fact that we can change the shape of the car, they've been the same for so long.
They've been the same. It's a little bit of like an echo chamber for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the appeal was a little lost on me. Mm-hmm. I remember like professors being like, no, this, you know, they're trying to convince us of the excitement behind car design. And they're like, look, like you can move the A pillar like 3 inches back and that's going to be like, wow, mind blown.
Yeah.
And that wasn't it for me, you know, like I was like, what if your car is a piece of cheese or I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, it had to be random. It had to be like more interesting and just more fun. And so that product design background, we actually got a lot of experience doing like toy internships through that program. Mm-hmm. It's a really great program. And we actually got to work at places like Hasbro or like Mattel or Spin Master, where we were doing like mainstream toy objects and kind of getting that work experience through there. So
yeah.
It was pretty valuable.
I mean, that's cool because like those are massive companies.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Are there toys that we would know that you maybe had some kind of hand in
I
working
mean,
with
sure.
them?
Sure. Like, yeah, I was on Boys Nerf at Hasbro.
Amazing. I love Nerf guns.
And I was doing like melee weapons and like blasters. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. Like,
yeah.
Just like doing like different shape language and, you know, honestly, most of it was like sitting at your desk and trying to like shoot engineers with Nerf guns,
mm-hmm.
Nerf blasters, I should say. And you can tell I got a lot out of that experience.
Yeah.
Because the main highlight for me was like shooting people with blasters. But
hey, it is what it is. Sometimes yeah. we take the joy out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it was like a really valuable experience for just kind of like learning the ropes of product design and how to take something like through production, what that looks like. And then of course, like Kid Robot, you know, great place to learn exactly how a toy gets made from start
yeah.
to finish.
From going in your class where you're learning like car modeling, and they are talking about just moving a piece like 3 inches and it's mind blowing, to working at a place like Hasbro where Nerf exists and they're saying like, hey, can you make a found object into a gun? Like, how do you,
yeah.
like that type of stuff. Like, what is that doing for your brain? 'Cause your whole college time was like boring as hell.
Yeah, a little bit. No, I mean, it was great. Like, you're taking the foundation of like generating speed forms over and over again, and you're suddenly applying it to some kind of IP that's like much more fascinating. So, yeah. You know, for example, they're like, aliens. Aliens are cool, man. Look up, you know, 20 alien designs.
And yeah.
Like, come up with like a blaster that like feels alien. And so, you know, you're dicking around looking at concepts and looking at all kinds of like the aliens through the history of humanity and trying to find like what is innate about aliens that you can inject into like a plastic blaster.
Yeah.
And it was fun. It was just a lot of fun. Like, who wouldn't want to do that? You know,
that's like, my search history would have been so crazy. Like, find me a gun from
absolutely
some space fiction, whatever.
Yeah. No, there was some mistakes that I made, like looking up like different bits of clockwork. I ended up like on like this weird skewed, like maybe it's a bomb type internet. And I was like, uh-oh, this is gonna be bad later. But I was looking for like mechanical bits to like make some kind of like steampunk-esque thing.
How funny. They're like, hey, one of our employees is looking up how to blow us up.
Yeah, and I feel like they get that a lot. Like my boss was cool like that. They were always looking up like, you know, weird shit to... You have to get design from somewhere. It doesn't come from like the vacuum of space. You have to like be able to like distill whatever is around you into something that's creative. And I think that's the joy of design more than it is like the joy of art. Is like design is what can we take from our world and like kind of funnel it into something that means something else.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it was cool that way.
Going from that as like an internship, and doing the schooling and bouncing back and forth, what's the first job coming out of that is design that you're happy to be a part of? Is it Kid Robot?
It is Kid Robot, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Tell me about getting hired at Kid Robot.
I mean, it was great. So I actually met Frank, the late creative director at Kid Robot, at DesignerCon. And we just kind of bonded over like toy design and things, and he offered a job. And so I, you know, took it. And that was pretty much it. I've been there for 5.5 years about. And it's just been a joy. And I have the distinct honor of being art director right now.
Insane.
It's just been so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going from, now you went from cars to things like Nerf.
Yeah.
To now things that we don't play with. They kind of just sit on our shelves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So how does that transition? Yeah.
We're coming full circle, I feel like. You know, we go from antiquities into everyday objects, into toys, and now we're doing back to like art and objects.
Yeah.
And that's really my bread and butter. I like art objects, but I mostly like things that just kind of like bring people joy, or, you know, kind of instigate some kind of weird feeling about it. And that's what art is, right? Like, it should provoke some kind of strong reaction. And so getting to work on like art toys and things that like people cherish, but maybe they're not sure why, or like they like bring them a lot of joy, but they're weird also.
Yeah.
That's excellent. That's what I want to be doing.
you're describing like the dream of most creatives, right?
Yeah,
like to get to a place where you can work with a company that understands that like, we're just here to make cool stuff.
It's cool stuff. And I think also what I appreciate is I get to have a step in the process where I'm helping like other artists kind of realize their vision.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting to take an artist who maybe primarily does like 2D art, And they haven't like explored that 3D aspect yet. And I work with them to make some kind of like 3D object that then becomes like an art toy that people can like have in physical reality.
Yeah.
And I think part of the Kid Robot ethos was always like creating fine art that people, that was affordable to people. You know, that's what the Dunny is. It's it's a piece of like some artist's fine art that's like really affordable to the mass market and that they can own and take ownership of and collect. Like that's really special. That's something that's super cool.
Yeah. I mean, going from starting with them and helping people walk through that process, at some point along the lines, you decided, I want to make a toy.
Yeah.
And so did it start, I mean, walk me up to this beauty of a goldfish.
Okay.
And did it start with this? Was this your first, like, this is what I want to do?
So, yeah. So I actually established my own brand before I started Kid Robot. It was a long time ago. And I just didn't do anything with it. I sat on it. I had like a bunch of project ideas. I would kind of like put them in a folder and store them for later. And I think like where a lot of companies start to branch into maybe like the consumer market, a lot of companies are heading into mass market or like licenses and things. And that's awesome to work on, but my outlet is always, it's gotta be like some weird shit. Like it has to be.
Yeah.
And if I'm not doing that in like my day job, then I have to be doing that in my free time.
Absolutely.
I have to do something that just like gets the creative juices out, you know, like so I ended up like actually the Gashapon machine, right? Like we found that at a yard sale and we were like, let's make a fish toy that goes like got the fish brand, it's got the brand name, like let's make the fish toy that goes in the machine, and we'll call it the Roe machine because it's like fish eggs. And we just kind of took that idea and we're like, let's launch off that. And we actually have like a project that we've been working on for like 8 years now that we were going to launch the brand with, and we kind of like just sharply pivoted and went with the fish as like the start. And I think it's been really, really great. Like it's been super beneficial to start like small like that and kind of just like see what you can do to get the momentum going. And like give people like a little taste to start with of like maybe what the greater vision is. And it's just been a great time.
Like, yeah.
It's just been fun. I think what's most valuable about it is, you know, we'll see people like, you know, like do the whole like gaze. So like they look at the goldfish at the top, they'll look at the machine, they'll look at the tiny fish and then be like, wow, I need that. And just like watching that like eye flow is like, it's so special. And I think as creatives, like that's what you want. You want to feel like understood through your art. And
we interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have an engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait! Salvation! Hooray! We're saved, DLV2! Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys!
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures!
DKE!
When people, like, do that sort of, like, triangle of eye flow, you can tell they like get it in some respect. Maybe they don't get what you get, but they get something and it's there and like that spark is there. And that's just been so rewarding to see that in person.
You did something with this that I love when artists do. So one, not only did you come out of the gate with just one design, but there's so many designs that are in that machine.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you took something that is so well known, like a goldfish, and gave your artist spin on it and put it in so many different variations. And I think that a lot of times people struggle. I don't know how to tell them that, like, toys give you unlimited possibilities. You can make a walrus with wings and people will buy it and love it because it's weird, and do it. Absolutely. Don't get stuck in, like, form. And looking at it, it was like you could tell there was real art that was being made in looking at all this stuff. And so tell me about figuring out that you wanted to do just this goldfish and then all the variations that came with it, like a smashed one and a pokey one. And
So there was a dumpling store on campus, and, you know, we used to go there like every Wednesday. They contributed to significant weight gain. And basically what it was is it was a shop and it sold two options. You were either going to get steam dumplings, five of them, or you were going to get pan-fried dumplings, five of them.
Great. And
that was it. That was the whole option. Lines out the door. I tell you what. and there was just something so endearing about not having to, like, look around and make a bunch of menu choices and, like, you know, have to figure out, like, what you want out of that. It gave you five dumplings and you ate them.
Yeah.
And I think that inspired a lot of, like, what we're doing right now. We want to give you, like, three options. And, you know, we want you to look at that and go, they're all the same color. They're all different shapes. You can either buy it or you won't, or you can buy something else. You could do both, but we sell fish.
Yeah.
and you could get a pin, a hat, or a fish. And that's, like, that's pretty much it. And I think kind of distilling it to that level of simplicity just, like, makes it really easy for people. You know, they look at it and they have a connection, and that's it. That's all it takes, really.
Yeah.
And so not having to go through these varieties of things, and I don't want to knock, like, varieties of things, like, all of our friends at Indie Toy, like, make all these really cool stuff. But I think for us, like, having that kind of manufacturing background and having the background with Kid Robot, we just wanted to, like, really distill and simplify what we were going for. And just keeping it at that level has really allowed us to, like, explore the full bounds of what that is and then move on. And so, like, what we're doing with this machine is it's a blind box collection. It's always going to be in the machine. We're not doing any sort of, like, wholesale retail. It's always going to be in that machine. That machine is going to be at Indie Toy. And you can buy it there. And I think what we're going to do with the collection is we're just going to keep making, like, weird fish, and eventually they're going to get weirder. Right now they're kind of cute. I think we're going to start making them skew into, like, pushing the bounds of maybe comfortability a little bit. But when, you know, when we feel like stop making one of the types of fish, that'll be it. And maybe you got the last one. You never know.
Oh, like, stop it. That would be crazy.
Right. So, I mean, it is quite literally the last goldfish.
Yeah.
You never know, as a collector, like, will you, do you have, like, one of the last ones? Do you not? Do you have the next new one? Who knows?
Yeah. I will tell you that the broken part of my brain. So I got home and I, like, unloaded and everything, and I set it on my desk, and my initial thing is, like, what do you think it would take to get them to make a giant version of every one of them? And it,
I mean, yeah, it's possible. But I think our focus is, like, mostly on the machine.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what can we do that's odd, but yet endearing?
Yeah.
And I do think there's some possibility that we'll make some other SKUs of things, like maybe there's a Goop plush. But I think the focus is like these characters live in this machine, and the machine in itself is like the character as well.
Yeah. It's like an art piece giving out art, which is
exactly.
I love that.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt.
There's something about having thought through every aspect of it. I mean, sometimes, especially at DesignerCon, where it's like everyone's just throwing money around and you're like, there's this navigation of, do I just want to make something that I know is going to sell? Or do I want to make something that reflects what I love and who I am? And
yeah.
And you guys nailed the cute market on the fish for sure. And so it's like, how are you able to do that? How are you able to figure out, like, I just want to put myself into my toys?
Yeah. So for us, like the brand, you know, we've been in the business side of things. We've been in the manufacturer side of things. Going into our own brand, we were kind of looking at this and we're like, you know what? We can't bet on this making any sort of money. Like we had to kind of like take that out of our goal plan. We didn't intend to make any sort of profit with this brand. We just wanted to kind of like make enough to keep making them, or like make enough to expand the brand a little bit, but that's it. Like we are not banking on like netting big money. We're not after like the hype market with it. We just wanted to like capture people's reactions.
Yeah.
That was like the focus. And so kind of like jumping off from there and like maintaining that simplicity, that was going to be like what drove us to make these fish. It was never going to be like, oh man, I wonder if we could, you know, bump up pricing or like, you know, do all these crazy things to help market it.
Yeah.
We've kind of been there. We've been on that side of things. And for us, it's mostly about just how do we capture like an audience and make them feel like participants in this brand.
It was interesting. I mean, this is the first time I tabled at DesignerCon, but going there every year, we're seeing this trajectory where, especially if it's an unknown IP, something that someone just created originally, if the price is too high, it just does not move. And you guys priced those little guys so well. And my favorite thing is when I walked over there and I pointed, I felt like a child, by the way. Like, yeah, I just was like, that's the great one I want. Like, how do I get that one? And one of you said, well, what would you pay for it? And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know. And I just threw out a number and both of you were like, yep, okay, that'll work.
Sure, man, sure.
Yeah. And it just, that was, I think because I'm willing to pay for art and like the investment that people have, but you guys have priced those little ones so well. And it makes them so attainable that I just kept seeing people with them in their hands walking by.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be our continued goal. So,
yeah,
you know, we're eating pretty significant costs by making these by hand. You know, if we're pricing our labor, I don't even know the figures, but
yeah.
And I'm not going to pretend to guess either.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1.18 inch. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsors Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
But it is like, we wanted them to be pocketable. In terms of both monetary value and also like put it in your pocket, walk away, feel good about doing that. Feel like you can go buy other stuff and you have this little piece of thing that's just for fun, just for you. And so that very much is the intention and the strategy is like, what can we put in DesignerCon that doesn't feel as much of like an investment, maybe. It just feels like something you got for yourself to put on your desk, or like some little bit of thing that just kind of brings you a spark of joy, that you don't, you know, that doesn't hurt your pocketbook in any capacity.
Yeah.
Or like, or at least like, you know, if it was kind of expensive for you, like makes you feel like it was worthy in some way.
Yeah.
Of buying that.
I love that. It gives off the vibe as well of like, if I've spent money on those investment style things and I have my last, I want to find the thing that I want so much more for that last $20.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it does feel very much like a little kid thing of don't spend all your money in one place. What are you going to go get?
Yeah.
And
the modern equivalent of taking your nickel to the dollar store and getting something that you can really appreciate. Like I would love to hit that market. And I feel like Gashapon as like an entity really does that, you know, like it's some little way that people still can feel comfortable spending their money, but also like buying things that represent them in some weird way. And so that's going to be the intent with it, I think. And then also seeing how far we can push people out of their like comfort zone of maybe like mainstream art objects or mainstream like cute objects. Can we push them a little bit so they're like, ooh, that's weird, but I don't know, I still like it. Like, can we kind of like steer the ship into like uncharted waters a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
Holy moly. So when you look over the company of The Last Goldfish, what's next or what are the hopes that you want to come from this?
Yeah, so that's going to be the big question. So we actually have two more machines. So the Row machine is our first machine. We're going to launch a second machine.
Awesome.
It's not going to be fish themed. It's going to be entirely different.
Okay.
So stay tuned for that. That should be cool. And I think just kind of going back to like art and antiquity and like capturing the humor in weird objects, like that's going to be a huge theme for us and probably like going to dictate the whole brand. Like that's what we're going to do. And again, just see how much we can get people to buy and interact with our weird headcanon. And how can we get comfortable being, you know, artists who don't necessarily demonstrate to you the context or the purpose. It doesn't have like a clear direction or a clear like design intent, maybe, but you still like it because it's funny or it like brings you some sense of relatability.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, we're definitely going to try to make some weirder things.
Good.
We gotta capture the market first, you know. You gotta like capture the audience, and then while you've got them, be like, what about this?
You know,
like, hey, you've got a fish, but you have to like you have like this weird thing. Like,
yeah.
You like it?
It's such a funny like bait and switch. Like, you like weird. We'll try this weird.
Yeah, like try this, you know? And I think we're starting to get there. You know, we released some new fish characters just specifically for Decon and moving forward. And one of them was Gramp, who is our like older kind of wrinkled fish.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had a few people who were like, wow, I hate that. I really don't like that. And, you know, that was kind of rewarding in its own way. Like, I appreciated that we were able to provoke that in somebody.
Absolutely.
and just like have that strong of an interaction with with what we're doing. So I would love to see more of that.
Yeah. And I think my favorite thing, especially with people, they have an inability to say something constructive sometimes. And then art is already so subjective. And so when they walk by and they're like, oh, I hate that. Well, it wasn't for you, but thanks for your insight.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's great. Like one person who really hated that, they came back twice.
To show that they really hated it. Yeah.
Well, not just to show they really hated it, but to be like, I hate that. And I want one of the other ones.
Yeah.
Like, I want that, but I want this thing. And just kind of like that level of interaction with the brand, like it owes itself to being something. And I don't know, there's something there with that where it's not just like people are walking by and they're like, oh, that's, you know, which is what we do a lot as like people in these giant craft venues or craft halls where we're walking by a lot of art. But for somebody to actually stop and be like, ah, I don't like that, you know, we're winning.
we're winning.
And I love that. I love people coming up to us and sharing that reaction, regardless of whether or not it's going to be positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I like that perspective. The last part of the podcast is really just plug in where you're headed and the different shows that you're doing and any new releases or anything coming up. And I'm hoping that you're going to be at Indie Toy LA in February.
Yeah.
Awesome. So
absolutely. We'll be at Indie Toy LA. We're going to have a limited number because we have to recover a little bit from Decon. We're hand making these. We'll try to make as many as we can between now and then. And we'll see how it goes. But yes, we'll definitely be at Indie Toy Con in February. We're also going to be at Collected Con, which is
awesome.
A big launch for us in April. Super excited to do that again with the Indie Toy crew. So you can catch us at either of those events and then we'll go from there. But yeah, we've got some exciting things in the works and at least, you know, a few more fish, right?
Heck yeah. I can't wait to see that. We'll be at Indie Toy Con. And then I'm still trying to figure out Collected Con. Being at Designer Con kind of messed up my brain of like, oh, what's next? Like, what can we do now? And so I'm trying to navigate. Is there a way to leverage like interviews and stuff at these places? And
I think so. I think, you know, reach out to Strange Cat. They, you know, they seem like really cool people. I don't know them personally, but they have like a great Discord server. Lots of fan favorites in there. And so I would say it's definitely like they made a good move trying to capture that LA audience again.
Yeah.
And bringing back, you know, Californians to that designer toy crowd, like it's going to be big.
Yeah.
Something there.
I can't wait to see it. But thank you so much for doing this interview with us.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. I mean, really appreciate it, man. It's been great.